Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Sidvale and East Devon Talking Newspaper, edition number 1816, being recorded on Tuesday the 16th of April 2024. Your registrars this morning were June Diffie and Jackie Freeman. Carl Taylor is your editor for this week, who is working away today. I'm Peter Eagles, your producer, with readers Tony Lambert, Sue Burge, Jeremy Tanner and Renee Forth. The first half of this week's news covers Sidmouth, Axminster, Beer and Ottery. We'll then report on some forthcoming events for your diary. Our second half contains news from Honiton and some notable news around Devon. So let's get started.
Hello, this is Tony Lambert with some news from Sidmouth. New banking hub is up and running. An official opening ceremony was held on Thursday, April the 4th to open Sidmouth's new banking hub at the former Jules store on New Street. David Cook, President of Sidmouth Chamber of Commerce and Cash Access UK's project manager, Sonia Critchley, joined together at the opening ceremony. MP Simon Jupp cut the ribbon. A campaign was launched last year calling for high street banks to staff a banking hub in Sidmouth. The service is now being run by Cash Access UK. Simon Jupp, MP for East Devon, said, "I was chuffed to be asked to cut the ribbon on Sidmouth's new banking hub. It's fantastic to see this much needed service open to residents. Staff from banks we haven't seen in town for years are now available face-to-face each week. As a Sidmouth resident, I'm really looking forward to being a regular customer." Denise Molyneux, Chairman of Sidmouth Chamber of Commerce, said, "The Chamber of Commerce is delighted at the opening of the banking hub, which has been well received by Sidmouth residents and businesses alike. We appreciate the efforts that Simon Jupp, MP, has made on behalf of the town to bring this most valuable facility within the reach of everyone." Sidmouth Ladies Probus Club 40th Anniversary. Sidmouth Probus Ladies Club has celebrated its 40th anniversary. On Thursday, April the 4th, 32 members attended a special lunch at the Victoria Hotel, where a founder member, Pam Sage, cut an anniversary cake. Each member was given a bud vase as a memento of the occasion. The lunch was followed by the club's annual general meeting. The club was set up in 1984, and its aims are to promote social and intellectual contacts through congenial companionship and caring support to members in times of need. Monthly meetings are held at All Saints Church Hall on the first Thursday of the month. Coffee and cake are available on arrival, and this is followed by a visiting speaker. Visitors are always welcome to attend. The next meeting will be on Thursday, May the 2nd, when there will be a talk on cyber security. Anyone who would like to come along is asked to email Jane Watts at Janie Watty, that's JaneeWatty, 02@gmail.com. Preparations for Sidmouth's International Jazz and Blues Festival. With the Sidmouth International Jazz and Blues Festival just 6 weeks away, preparations and final planning are moving up a gear. The festival takes place between Thursday, May the 23rd and Bank Holiday Monday, May the 27th. Headline evening concerts take place on the dedicated outdoor stage at Blackmore Gardens with an eclectic lineup of artists including Tony Hadley, FM Robots, Roach Ford, Roberto Fonseca, Ruby Turner, Ellis Bailey and Mika Miller. The programme also includes 3 days of high-quality live music performances on the outdoor stage in Blackmore Gardens, with 5 acts performing each day between Saturday and Monday. These include Ian Shaw, the UK's number one male jazz singer, Afro-Cuban jazz giants Snowboy and the Latin Section, and Acantha Lang with her unique blend of New Orleans soul and funk. Tickets for the 3 days are £25 and are called the Count Me In Festival Ticket. Festival director Eden Bowden said, "We have most certainly raised the bar higher in respect to the quality and variety on offer at this year's festival. Music unites us together from all backgrounds, and I am extremely proud that we have managed to provide such a wide choice of events for festival attendees to enjoy and to appreciate." Sidmouth Musical Theatre presents 9 to 5, the musical. Sidmouth Musical Theatre played to full houses last week in their usual Easter spot at the Manor Pavilion Theatre, writes Tricia Barclay. This year they presented 9 to 5, the musical based on the 1980 film with music and lyrics by Dolly Parton and the book by Patricia Resnick. The opening number certainly set the benchmark for the action to come, as the entire ensemble took to the stage dressed in various forms of night attire, some more revealing than others, and one particularly uplifting, as they tumbled out of bed and yawned and stretched and tried to come to life. Throughout the number, everyone weaved in and out of the wings, making lightning costume changes until all were fully dressed and ready to face the day. The story centred on three very different female employees at the office of Consolidated as they concocted a plan to turn the tables on their sexist, lying, hypocritical boss and create a more conducive working environment. The leads played their roles to perfection. Phil Ward was excellent as Franklin Hart, the sleazy boss, and was well outsmarted by the three girls, Samantha Landy as Dora Lee, made a sassy, simple country girl, Gemma Waterfield's a gauche and awkward Judy, and Pip Hill, determined, steadfast Violet. Claire Spurrell was on top form as Jobsworth, Roz, with her eye on the boss. Her solo number simply brought the house down. Adrian Fox made a sympathetic Joe. Juliet Squire convincingly played the office of Lush, with creditable cameos from Selwyn Cusman, Ray Lockton, Torkel McNeilage, and Jeffrey Ward. Set changes were smoothly managed and the lighting effects complemented the different moods. Inspired direction by Isabel Court, skillful choreography by Vicky Evans, together with experienced musical director Alfie Pugh, a talented orchestra, an energetic and enthusiastic cast and crew, all made for a fantastic and rapturously received show.
Hello, I'm Sue, and this is news of Sidmouth Running Club. Despite the yellow wind weather warning and the surprise of a tree surgeon working on part of the route, the second SRC Junior Stroke Sidmouth Fit Fun Run was a great success on Saturday morning with 48 children taking part. SRC Junior's leaders, Graham and Donna Wormsley Westlake and SidFit Tony Sarsby, had to amend their plans, including foregoing the popular water slide down the hill and staying away from the beach at Jacob's Ladder, but this did not stop the fun. Starting from Muttersmore Car Park, trainers were lost in the mud within first 5 minutes, and many slipped and skidded down the hill, including parents. Tony led three fun fitness activities along the route at Connaught Gardens and both ends of the promenade, and the fun and the run finished with a loop around the Ham Play Park, where everyone received a medal. A big thank you to everyone who took part, and to the Mighty Green Marshals, many of whom were also involved with JP's 20th anniversary X to Ash Axe race. The wind was still blowing strongly on Sunday, but the decision made by first-time race director Adrian Harris to move the registration venue to the ocean in Sidmouth was a blessing, especially for the volunteers handing out race numbers. As the runners, including eight from SRC, set off at 10 a.m. and headed into the wind towards Sandy Bay and Budley Salterton, following the coast path, the marshals were struggling to set up the aid stations. Gazebos were a definite no, and setting up cups and food trays without them blowing away required extra thought and cunning strategies. Opting to run the 10-mile Sid to Axe option, nine SRC runners set off from Sidmouth seafront at 11 a.m, and it wasn't long before the front runners from Exmouth were overtaking them through Ladrum Bay into Sidmouth and back up Salcombe Hill onto Western Mouth. The relentless steps up from Western Beach, the steep climb out of Branscombe, and the very strong headwind on Beer Head did not deter Axe Valley runner Matthew Clist, who was the first male to cross the wind-battered finish line at Seaton Yacht Club in 2 hours 59:53, and Exmouth Harrier Alice Kelly, who was the first female to finish in 3 hours 24:40, sixth overall. Jake Roweth was the first male, Mighty Green, to finish the 22-mile X to Axe in 24th place in 3 hours 53:42, and Amanda Stokes, the first female, Mighty Green, to finish in 56th place in 4 hours 21:48. Personal bests for both on their first time running the event. MG Scott Chown was the first male to finish the Sid to Axe in 2 hours 38:13, having run a new PB of 26:45 at Seaton Parkway the day before, and a very happy Sarah Clapton was the first female MG to finish the Sid to Axe in 2 hours 40:46. Sidmouth Chiefs successful season finish. Sidmouth Chiefs finished their successful league season in fine style with a comfortable 43-14 victory against North Petherton, writes Terry O'Brien. The visitors had the best of the opening exchanges before the Chiefs opened the scoring on their first visit into the opposing half. A very slick handling move gave Sian Warren a run on the left wing. Somehow he forced his way through three defenders to touch down in the corner. Jake Allen converted from wide out. Sian Warren was on the score sheet again a few minutes later, following a 5-metre scrum. A long pass from Phil Dolman found him in space, and he carried two defenders over the line for the touchdown. The try was unconverted. North Petherton crossed the Sidmouth line midway through the half, but were unable to ground the ball. From a line-out catch-and-drive play, Jed Reed got the touchdown to try for try number three. Following a turnover on halfway, more good handling sent Sian Warren in for his hat-trick despite the attention of three defenders. Jake Allen's conversion made the half-time score 24-0. 4 minutes into the second half, Harry Emmett went over from close range after good handling through three phases inside the 22. When the Chiefs drove a line-out maul 20 metres into the North Petherton 22 before it was stopped, Josh Best drove over from the back of the resulting ruck. Jake Allen converted. The visitors had a purple patch in the middle of the half to score two fine tries. The first came from a slick move on the blind side of a scrum inside the Sidmouth 22 to create an overlap for the right winger. The second was scored by a centre as he picked a good line through the Sidmouth midfield. Both were converted by the fly half. The final score came after a series of rucks inside the North Petherton 22 had stretched the defence for Jake Smith to find a gap in the centre. Jake Allen's conversion completed the scoring. The win took the Chiefs' league points to 101 out of a possible 110 for a convincing league championship. They now concentrate on the Devon Intermediate Cup, and on Saturday they travel to Newton Abbott for the semi-final. The following week, the Colts travel to the same venue for the Devon Colts Cup final, following their 2010 win against Topsham.
Hi, Jeremy here with news from Axminster and beer. A firm has been swindled out of £3,000 worth in fuel. An Axminster man swindled £3,000 from a transport firm by using a stolen fuel card to fill up his camper van 32 times. Martin Redford was caught on CCTV at filling stations in North Devon as he put up to 100 litres of diesel a time into the vehicle or into petrol drums. He claimed he had no idea that the card had been stolen and said he was getting the fuel for a mystery friend named Dale Wilson, who the police were unable to trace. He said Mr. Wilson was planning to use some of the diesel in his boat and had let him use the card to fill his camper van as reward from doing him favours. The card had in fact been stolen from a logistics company named Greencore DTS, which is based at Exeter Airport. They reported its loss to the police after they discovered it was being used illegally to buy fuel. Redford, aged 48, formerly of Poplar Mount, Axminster, but now living at Stella Maris Court, Biddeford, denied fraud but was convicted by the magistrates and committed for sentence at Exeter Crown Court. He was jailed for 8 months, suspended for a year, and ordered to take part in a 12-session mental health treatment program and 15 days of rehabilitation activities by recorder Miss Hannah Wilcox, KC. She chose not to activate a one-year suspended sentence, which was imposed at Exeter Crown Court in July 2020 for drug supply and firearms offences. She said she was taking into account the successful work which Redford completed with probation and his current poor mental health. She fined him £30 for breaching the suspended sentence. She told him the impact statement from the company shows the effect on them was detrimental. Mr. Peter Coombs, prosecuting, said Redford used the stolen card 32 times between November 11, 2021 and February 1, 2022, and was filmed at the Morrison's filling station at Biddeford, putting diesel into a camper van and drums. There were others with him on occasions, and he told police after his arrest. He said he was given the card by Mr. Wilson and had no idea it was stolen. Miss Bathsheba Cassell, defending, said Redford wanted to apologise to the company and regrets their loss. He has stayed out of trouble since this offence and did well under his previous suspended sentence, tackling his own drug problem and seeking help for his mental health. He is now living a more stable existence, but would welcome more help from the probation service. He is currently living on benefits because his poor mental health means he is unable to work. Man found dead at motocross. A man from Axminster was found unresponsive on a motocross track in Dorchester on Saturday, April 6th. Dorset police received a report of an incident at Higher Ashton Farm off the B3159 Goulds Hill, Martinstown. A rider was found unresponsive. Officers and the ambulance service attended, but the 54-year-old man from Axminster was pronounced dead at the scene. His next of kin has been informed and the coroner was notified. The incident is not currently being treated as suspicious, but officers are looking into the circumstances. Police Sergeant Chris Brolin of the Rhodes Policing Team said, "First and foremost, our thoughts are with the loved ones of the man who tragically died. We are trying to establish what exactly happened. The event took place on farmland and was not a race. It is believed that over 60 people took part, and we are hoping that someone may have recorded footage that could assist us with our investigation. I would urge anyone who used a helmet camera or any other device to please check if they have caught anything of relevance." Dorset police are now appealing for witnesses or footage at the motocross event. Anyone with information is asked to contact Dorset police at www.dorset.police.uk or via email at scit@dorset.pnn.police.uk or by calling 101. A hang glider was left with serious facial injuries after a heavy landing on a cliff top in East Devon. the pilot had to be airlifted to hospital from near the old lookout on Bierhead following the incident. The Bier Coast Guard Rescue Team, Devon and Cornwall Police, Southwestern Ambulance Service, the Dorset Air Ambulance and the Hazardous Area Response Team were all called out in the afternoon of Saturday, March 30th. The injured man was treated at the scene, then transported to the Royal Devon and Exeter Hospital by air ambulance. His injuries are not to believed to be life-threatening. East Devon District Council has laid an additional 120 metres of matting, which improves access for residents and tourists in the summer. The matting allows people such as wheelchair and mobility scooter users to come onto the beach when they can't due to the pebbles. The council is planning similar projects for Seaton, Sidmouth and Budley Salterton as part of East Devon District Council's commitment to improving access for all. This project builds upon the work done jointly with Bier Parish Council last July and was supported by a generous grant of £5,300 from the East Devon National Landscapes Access for All Fund.
This is Rennie Forth reading articles about Ottery St Mary. Traders in Ottery St Mary are being invited to apply for funding to revamp the outside of their businesses. The Town Council has opened applications for its third shopfront fund scheme, offering financial help with work that makes traders' premises more attractive. The funding is offered to shops and restaurants within the parish, which are open to the general public and sell a range of goods, foods or services. Grants are available of up to £500 or half the project costs, whichever is lower. This year the scheme has been updated to include retrospective applications for work that has already been carried out, if it was done after October the 1st, 2023. When the scheme was last run in 2022-23, more than £3,000 was awarded. The successful applicants included Rabbit & Co. and the Coffee Bank, both of which used the money to pay for repainting and new signage. Nick Scott from Rabbit & Co. said at the time, "It was a welcome contribution towards the costs of setting up the new site. I think these types of grants are incredibly valuable to small businesses and help us improve the look of the high street." Ottery Town Councillor John Green said, "We were delighted with the success of the last scheme and the positive impact that work carried out had on the look of the high street. We look forward to receiving more applications this year to continue the success of improving the look of Ottery's High Street and help increase the footfall of visitors. Applications for the next round of funding must be received by May 31st, with work to be completed by June 30th. Full details of eligibility and an application form can be found on Ottery Town Council's website." Ottery King's School Reunion. A group of old girls from the King's School in Ottery St Mary are hoping to bring together some of the pupils who attended the school during the 1960s. Jane Priest and her friends started at the school in September 1964 and are holding a reunion event for anyone who was in their year group. No date has been set for the reunion, but it will probably be in late June or early July. The event will feature a guided tour of the school, as it is today, followed by a group meal. Anyone who would like to attend can contact Jane on 01297 552 154. The group have been sharing their memories of the King's School during the 1964 to 1971 period, when education was very different to the present day. Here are some of the things they remember about that time. The senior mistress, Miss Smith, used to get us to kneel on a table and ensure our skirts were no more than 4 inches from the table to the hem of the skirt. We would roll up the skirt later. Many of us remember the journey from Honiton on the train at 8:15. Change at Sidmouth Junction, then on to Ottery, walk up the hill in all weathers, carrying all we needed for the day, including PE kit, cookery ingredients, etc. When Dr. Beeching closed the small lines, we went by bus, which took us door to door. Heavenly. The Sidmouth children had a similar journey. We went into the premises in different gates and used different playgrounds. Boys in one, girls in another. Everyone went into assembly together because the school was small enough to fit us in. Every day there was a reading of some sort, a prayer and a hymn, before notices were given out. The staff sat on the gallery in their teaching gowns, which they wore all day. Some staff used them to wipe the blackboard. Pupils who had received a detention had to go and collect a slip in front of the whole school. In PE, we were expected to climb up ropes and jump over horses onto mats that had to be dragged from a storage area. In games, we were sent on cross-country runs, but most girls walked the course. At the end of a lesson, 40 minutes, an electric bell was rung to alert some of the school, but the outlining rooms couldn't hear it. So our trusted student ran around with a brass bell to let those classrooms know. At lunchtime, two girls, only girls, went to the staff room to wash the men's cups. The ladies' staff room was separate, and they washed their own cups. I enjoyed listening to the men's conversations about how different aspects of a subject should be taught. Most of the men smoked, some a pipe, and I would go home smelling of smoke as a result. We also served the staff lunches in a separate section of the canteen. The chemistry lab looked out over a field where the hospital is now. Usually cows were in it and sometimes a bull. On those days, we enjoyed a biology lesson on the reproduction of cattle at the same time as chemistry. The reunion event will be a chance to share other memories like these, look at old school photographs, and see how the King's School has changed over the last 60 years. Long waits. Thousands of patients are waiting months for an autism diagnosis in Devon, figures show. A think tank has said, a radical rethink of autism and ADHD assessments and treatments is needed if the NHS is to keep up with demand. The National Institute of Health and Care Excellence has set a target time of 13 weeks for those with suspected autism to be assessed. But figures from NHS England show around 3,410 people in the area covered by the NHS Devon Integrated Care Board had been waiting at least this long for an autism diagnosis at the end of 2023. Of these, 11% were under 18. This was up from the same point a year before, when 2,520 people were waiting for 13 weeks or longer, 13% of them children.
And now some what's on. On Thursday, April the 18th, Mixed Abilities Pilates at Sidmouth Sailing Club. There are 5 classes on Thursdays. Pre-booking is essential. Contact Grace on 075-0011-2646 or visit redbaypilates.co.uk. There's the weekly antiques valuation afternoons at Kennaway House, Coburg Road, Sidmouth, 2 till 4 p.m. Bairns, Hampton and Littlewood will appraise your articles with no fee or obligation. Inquiries 01392 413 100. Then there's a third Thursday tea, brackets three teas, at St Francis Church Hall, Woolbrook, 2:30 till 4 p.m. Free tea and biscuits, a place to chat, book and puzzle swap table, there's jigsaw puzzles and traditional games and other activities. All are welcome and there's free car parking. There's the Sidmouth Ukulele Band at Twyford House, Coburg Road, 7 till 9 p.m. To come along, please first contact Sylvia Brownlee on 07890 327 690. Sidvell Folk Choir at the Dance Studio, the Unitarian Old Dissenting Meeting House, located at the top of the High Street in Sidmouth and the junction with All Saints Road, 7:30 till 9 p.m. So that was all on Thursday, April the 18th. Now some events on, or an event, on Saturday the 20th of April. The Fleetwood Mac and Tom Petty Legacy. Europe's only tribute to Fleetwood Mac, Stevie Nicks and Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. At the Gateway Theatre Company, 4 Street, Seaton. 8:30 p.m, tickets £20. Information from 01297 625 699.
Tony again with some news from Honiton. Honiton's new heat pump centre. The Dakin Sustainable Home Centre in Station Approach is being launched by Bradford's, a family-run independent builders merchants, and will be officially opened by the Tiverton and Honiton MP Richard Ford. This will be Dakin's fifth sustainable home centre launch in 2024, as the transition from fossil fuels to renewables and heat pumps accelerates the growth of its network. The launch event will run from 8 a.m. until 3 p.m. and is open to homeowners and trade professionals such as house builders, merchants and heating installers. Visitors will be able to meet experts from Bradford's and Dakin UK and see presentations of Dakin products and its green industry installer training. Free tea and coffee will be on offer throughout the day, with hot food also available. As well as providing a hub for homeowners to learn about renewable heating and for installers to bring their customers, the Dakin Sustainable Home Centre will house a heat pump training centre. This will help plumbing and heating installers diversify into renewable heating solutions and ensure the long-term competitiveness of their businesses as fossil fuel boilers are being phased out. Luke Smith, Trading Director P&H at Bradford's, said, "Opening this new sustainable home centre is a fantastic milestone for our business and the local community. It will be a place for homeowners, developers and installers to familiarise themselves with air source heat pump technology and to speak to an expert to discuss the most suitable heating and cooling solutions. This is our first renewable showroom that will support our focus to move away from fossil fuels over to a more sustainable heating solution for all our customers. We're also excited to be able to offer quality installer training on the latest Dakin air source technology. We are looking forward to seeing lots of friendly faces on the big day, and we are excited to have local MP Richard Ford join us to celebrate this next step in our journey to become our community, which will be more sustainable. With our local expert advice in all areas of plumbing and heating, and Daikin's market-leading product range, there will be something for everyone, both at the launch event and in the future. To register attendance at this launch event, email shc.honiton@bradfords.co.uk. And to learn more about Bradfords, visit its website. Former Council Offices Development Plans. The former offices of Honiton Town Council, Fairfield House, could become four new flats if plans are approved. Document 24/0668/FUL relates to Fairfield House, New Street, Honiton. The plans involve converting and partial change of use into four residential flats. The plans involve dividing the house up into four flats with a mixed commercial space within it as well. The document has been prepared by GDV Limited, the owners of Fairfield House. Fairfield House in New Street has a long history. A blue plaque on the building says that in the 1700s and the 1800s, it was home to prominent surgeon Tanner John Colesworthy and Dr. Samuel Devenish. Miss Emily Woodgates ran a ladies' school between 1851 and 1856. In 1942, Dr. John Hutchings Gerard and his son John practiced medicine there, and during World War II, the building was home to the Women's Land Army. When Dr. Gerard died, the building was sold off, his estate, to fund building the Gerard Wing at Honiton Hospital. In 1954, the property became Honiton Borough Council office. Honiton's triumph. Honiton triumphed over Devonport with an away victory of 35-17, playing on the Navy's 4G pitch because the main pitch was waterlogged. Conditions were just right for an open game of rugby. There was a strong crosswind for both sides to deal with, and services started strongly and seemed to be on top. There was, however, no score for the first 20 minutes, with Honiton defending well, especially in the midfield. Services broke the deadlock with a well-taken long-range try to give five up. Honiton bounced back with a try of their own when Jake Johnson scored after some slick hands from his fellow backs. Skipper Johnny House slotted a good goal for Honiton to go 7-5 up. Honiton then added a penalty shortly after and then scored another great try through fullback Ollie Rice. Finn Parrott then got a yellow card for a high tackle, but Honiton still looked dangerous and were playing some great rugby. Another House penalty and a great pass from Steve Smart saw Ollie Rice cut through to score under the posts for another converted try, and Honiton turned round 27-5 up. 10 minutes into an even second half, House kicked another penalty for Honiton to extend the lead to 30-5. Despite good hands from both sides, there was no further score until 15 minutes to go. Services then intercepted a pass and scored an unconverted try, which made the score 33-10. Honiton bounced back, and a good break from Josh Rice released their quick hands, and James Good dotted down out wide, becoming 35-10. Devonport didn't give up and were rewarded with a late try. So the score finished with 35-17 to the away side.
Sue again, with general items about Devon. Mystery surrounding MPs' web addresses. Three web domains in the name of a Liberal Democrat MP that redirected people to a Conservative rival's website now appear to have been disconnected. Pressure began growing on Simon Jupp, the Conservative MP for East Devon, last week to explain why the web addresses richardford.co.uk, richardford.com and richardforduk sent users to Mr Jupp's website. Mr Ford, Liberal Democrat MP for Tiverton and Honiton, will contest the new Honiton and Sidmouth seat against Mr Jupp at the forthcoming general election. Now, just days after news of the web domains emerged in a national newspaper, they do not connect to Mr Jupp's website. A Google search for them still lists them as results, but the links are no longer active. Mr Jupp said he was, quote, not responsible for the web domains. And the Electoral Commission said it is not an issue they will be looking into. A spokesperson for Mr Ford said, links that look genuine but simply redirect to Conservative websites only serve to arouse suspicion and undermine trust. People deserve better from their MP, and at the election they have the chance to demand better. Prosecutions for begging in Devon and Cornwall. There have been almost 100 prosecutions in Devon and Cornwall for begging over the past 5 years, figures show. It comes as the government faces criticism over parts of the Criminal Justice Bill, which will replace the Georgian-era Vagrancy Act. The new bill could allow police to fine nuisance rough sleepers. Homeless charity Crisis said people living in the streets need compassion and support rather than being cast into the criminal justice system. Figures from the Ministry of Justice show there were 94 prosecutions for begging in Devon and Cornwall under the Vagrancy Act in the 5 years to June 23. The Act also criminalises sleeping out. However, there were no prosecutions in the area for this offence. Under the 1824 law, anyone prosecuted faces a fine of up to £1,000 and a criminal record. Across England and Wales, there have been nearly 2,888 prosecutions under the Act. Just 13 were for sleeping out, while the rest were for begging. Overall, 2,300, 80%, resulted in a conviction, including 69 in Devon and Cornwall. Three candidates stand in the election for the Police and Crime Commissioner for Devon and Cornwall. The current PCC, Conservative Alison Hernandez, is running for re-election, and she is up against a Labour candidate, Daniel Steele, and a Liberal Democrat, Steve Lodge. Ms Hernandez has been in the role since 2016 and said she is proud of her achievements, having made real tangible progress in the four priority areas she set for policing in 2021, tackling violence, antisocial behaviour and drugs, and improving road safety. She plans to continue this work. She said, Devon and Cornwall enjoys the highest number of police officers that it has ever had. We see an estate of police stations and other facilities that have been well managed, refreshed and renewed where needed. And we have seen a progressive investment in technology and resources. But both of her challengers say more could be done to reduce crime and restore trust in the police. Daniel Steele, Labour, said he would bring strengthened integrity and honesty to the role of PCC and outlined the following pledges. Put police back on the streets. More police officers and PCSOs on our streets to prevent crime, catch offenders and tackle antisocial behaviour. Tackle the levels of violence against women and girls. Prevent youth crime. Knife crime is soaring. Boost crime prevention and victim support and crack down on illegal sewage dumping. Steve Lodge said the Liberal Democrats have sharpened their focus on law enforcement and criminal justice with crime and policing policies that strike a balance between prevention, effectiveness and trust. The party believes that communication is the bedrock of effective policing. He said current government policies have missed the mark and we need more innovative and community-focused approaches to crime and policing. His pledges are engage our senior officers, committing to bridge the gap between the police and the communities they protect, back fair funding and smarter spending, ensuring our police force has the resources required to fight crime effectively, steer a return to proper community policing, strengthening bonds with local communities to prevent crime and improve safety, promote rehabilitation, working to reduce reoffending and secure a safer future for all residents. The election will take place on May the 2nd and the winner will serve a 4-year term in the role.
Here's Jeremy again with more news from Devon. Mixed economic picture for the South West in 2024, but confident markets remains robust. An organisation representing manufacturers say those in the Southwest have seen a mixed picture so far in 2024, but confidence remains robust despite the UK economy's overall weakness. Make UK, formerly the Engineering Employers Federation, is forecasting growth in manufacturing of only 0.1% this year and 0.8% in 2025, even less than in the economy as a whole. The prediction is contained in Make UK's Q4 Manufacturing Outlook Survey, published with business advisory firm BDO. It reports that output in the Southwest fell in the first 2 months of the year, but predictions both output and orders will pick up substantially in the second quarter of the year, in line with the national picture. This picture is not currently reflected in investment intentions or recruitment, it says, although this shows an easing from a strong picture for both indicators last year rather than any negative pattern. Jim Davison, director for the South at Make UK, said, "After the economic and political shocks of the last few years, there's now strong confidence among manufacturers in the Southwest, despite the mixed picture. While growth in the economy is not exactly supercharged, the positive announcements in the autumn statement and budget can at least allow them to plan with more certainty for the future." Matthew Sewell, Regional Head of Manufacturing at BDO, said, "Manufacturers in the Southwest have continued to show their ability to overcome wave after wave of challenges, but can't continue to do this indefinitely without more long-term support from government. The expected increase in output and orders in the latter half of this year is positive and in line with the overall national picture. But whatever happens over the next quarter will be critical to manufacturing businesses in the Southwest." Insulation needed to reduce gas usage. People who live in poorly insulated homes will be facing gas bills around 50% higher than those whose properties have met government targets as the new price cap comes into force. Analysis from the Energy and Climate Change Intelligence Unit found the average annual gas bill will be around £340 higher per year for homes with an Energy Performance Certificate score of F. These are some of the leakiest homes in the country, meaning the heat produced by gas boilers quickly escapes the building. The extra cost is when compared to homes with EPC ratings of C, which are considered reasonably well insulated. Even D-rated homes will face annual bills around 15% higher, the research found. ECIU energy analyst Jess Ralston said, "For millions living in cold, leaky homes, insulation is crucial for lowering bills. But with energy independence remaining a top concern for the public and politicians, alongside the cost of living, insulation is now also key to reducing our demand for gas. In September, PM Rishi Sunak scrapped plans that would have forced private landlords to ensure their properties had a minimum level of insulation. A Department for Zero Security and Net Zero spokesman said, "Nearly half of all homes in England now have an EPC rating of C or above, up from just 14% in 2010. We have allocated £20 billion for energy efficiency, which will raise insulation standards of around 500,000 homes across the UK. There has been a fall in UK's greenhouse gas emissions in 2023. Britain's greenhouse gas emissions fell to a new low in 2023 after households and businesses cut back on heating due to high energy prices. The Energy Department said emissions within a country's territorial boundaries fell by 5.4% to 384.2 million tonnes in CO2 equivalent last year compared to 2022. It said this was due to reduced gas use in UK electricity generation and higher energy and other prices that reduced demand for heating. The electricity sector saw greenhouse gas emissions fall by 19.6% in 2023, the data shows. The Energy Department said Britain imported more electricity from France last year, cutting the need for domestic fossil fuel power production.
And it's Rennie again with two more items of general news. Levels of untreated sewers released into rivers doubles in 2023. Storm overflows dumped untreated sewage into rivers and coastal waters around England for more than 3.6 million hours in 2023, new figures show, more than double the previous year's total. The data published by the Environment Agency reveals there were 464,056 spills in 2023, up 54% from 301,091 in 2022, which the organisation said was partly due to England experiencing its sixth wettest year on record. South West Water was among the companies responsible for high levels of wastewater outflows. According to the Environment Agency's figures, sewage spills from monitored storm overflows in areas served by South West Water lasted for 530,737 hours in 2023, up from 290,271 the previous year. The national figures were described as disappointing, but sadly not surprising by the Environment Agency, while campaigners said the scale of the polluting discharges was a final indictment of a failing industry. The total duration of sewage spills more than doubled from 1,754,921 hours in 2021 to 3,606,170 hours in 2023. Both their frequency and duration were also up on 2020, which saw comparable rainfall. The figures are the highest yet recorded, although officials caution that comparisons over the years are difficult as an increasing number of storm overflows have been fitted with monitors over time and all now have the technology to record spills. The Environment Agency's Director of Water, Helen Wakeham, said, "We are pleased to see record investment from the water sector, but we know it will take time for this to be reflected in spill data. It's a complex issue that won't be solved overnight. No other country has the level of monitoring we do, with 100% of storm overflows in England now fitted with a monitor. We are better placed than ever before to hold water companies accountable." Water Minister Robin Moore said, "I have been clear that sewage pollution in our waters is unacceptable, which is why in just the last few months, we announced a consultation to ban water bosses' bonuses when criminal breaches have occurred. Quadrupled company inspections next year, fast-tracked £180 million of investment to cut spills and launched a whistleblowing portal for water company workers to report breaches." A spokesperson for industry body Water UK said, "These results are unacceptable and demonstrate exactly why we urgently need regulatory approval to upgrade our system so it can better cope with the weather. We have a plan to sort this out by a tripling investment, which will cut spills by 40% by 2030, more than double the government's target. Tax cuts will give Devon workers a boost. Tax cuts will give workers in Devon a boost, although much of that money will likely be gobbled up by a host of annual price rises. According to the government, the typical worker in Devon will be £769 better off thanks to successive cuts to employee national insurance contributions. Around 27 million workers across the UK will see a boost to their take-home pay from April 6th, with more than 2.4 million people benefiting in the South West. The savings are a result of successive cuts to national insurance contributions, announced slashing the main rate of employee national insurance contributions from 12% to 8%, and the main rate of self-employed national insurance contributions from 9% to 6%. Taking the national insurance contributions reforms across autumn statement and spring budget together, the Treasury said this was an overall tax cut worth over £20 billion per year, the largest ever cut to employee and self-employed national insurance. Due to the combined cuts to employee and self-employed national insurance contributions, the Treasury forecast that total hours worked would increase by the equivalent of almost 200,000 full-time workers by 2028 to 29. Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, said, "The tax cuts coming into force this week show that our economic plan is working, putting £769 a year back into the pockets of working people across the South West. People will start to see this saving in their pay packet this month, and when it's responsible to do so, we will go further, ending the unfair double tax on those who earn their income through work." However, the tax cut may not keep the pound in workers' pockets for long, with a number of household bills increasing this month. Council tax is rising, while water bills, which in the South West are already the fourth highest in the country, will also go up. Most broadband and mobile phone providers are also hiking prices, and the TV licence fee will go up by 6.6% to £169.50 after being frozen for 2 years. Vehicle tax is also rising, with the annual flat rate for a car registered on or after April 1st, 2017, going up by £10. NHS dental charges in England will increase by 4%, which means a standard checkup will cost £1 more at £26.80. Some people are eligible for free dental care. Meanwhile, young workers who drive may feel the pinch, with reports earlier this year with insurance premiums rocketing.
And that's this week's local news roundup. Many thanks to today's team, and especially Jeremy Tanner, for standing in for Edward Hume, who is not well. We also thank the editors of the newspapers from which we have taken today's articles. They are the Midweek Herald, Ottery and Sidmouth Heralds, and the Express and Echo. We have abbreviated some of the articles to cover as many as possible. We also thank the Royal Mail for their free delivery service. Please return your pouch and memory stick promptly, preferably using a pillar box, so that we can continue to send you the talking newspaper every week. There is a website where these recordings can be heard using a computer, iPad or smartphone. Its address is www.eastdevontalkingnewspaper.co.uk. This team expects to be back with you on the 4th of June. And so until then, it's goodbye from all of us.
Goodbye.